Good morning, everyone. I hope that everybody had a good Independence Day, good weekend, able to slow down, I hope. Some people just barrel right through, but I hope you're able to stop. That's important for us. So today we're beginning our summer sermon series. And when we do series through the summer, we usually design them in a way so you can miss them. We know people are gone throughout the summer. So if there are several people who aren't here today, when they come back next week, they're not going to be like, oh, what did they talk about last week? And vice versa. Like if you're going to be gone throughout the summer, you can miss these and jump back in and you won't skip a beat. Okay? So no message is dependent on the other. So throughout the summer, we'll be looking at specific characters that we find in the Bible, characters that some of us may have heard described as Bible heroes. But we're going to challenge that notion a bit because really, the Bible has one hero, right? God is the hero of the Bible. And in the New Testament, we get to see this hero God show up in the flesh as a man named Jesus. It's absolutely stunning, it's world-changing, it's future-changing, and it is beautiful. And of course, we'll talk about this hero God-man named Jesus throughout the series, but we're going to be directing the bulk of our attention to these people that we have called Bible heroes, many who actually fit that hero description pretty well, but they're not perfect heroes, not by a long shot. These are flawed men and women who God chose to use in spite of their flaws, in spite of their humanness. God said, I'm going to move my story forward through this broken person, through these broken people. So for the purpose of this series, we're going to call them anti-heroes. These are people that we sometimes root for, but who in their humanness, they fail and let us down, sometimes over and over and over again. And can we just name from the outset, how amazing is that, right? Like, how amazing is it that God used messed up people? This is very good news for us. Right? Not only does this show us how gracious and good our Heavenly Father is to want to work his purposes through feeble, fallible, broken people like you and me, it also means that God is going to work out his purposes even in spite of and sometimes because of our mistakes, which is like hard for us to even comprehend, but God does that over and over and over again. How big and beautiful is God's story that he invites us into. It's amazing. Speaking of which, before we dive into the text, can we simply name the fact that the story of the entire universe is God's story? If there is a creator God, if there's intelligent design, and we believe that here, there's a God who made everything, then this is all his story, and God's moving in the midst of this story. And each of you in this room has a tiny story. All right, very small story, and we have a choice in our lives. Do we want to be the star of our tiny little stories, or do we want to have a supporting role in the eternal, big, grand story of God? If any of you have gotten to see some of the Marvel superhero movies, that might be most of us, but I'm sure it's not all of us, you might have noticed that the credits for those movies are ridiculously long. Now, part of the reason that you know that those credits are so, so long is because they did this interesting, unique thing where they forced us to watch the credits by putting these end credit scenes, right? And so we were like, oh my gosh, there's so many people it took to make these movies. Like, it takes a lot of people to put this together. And of course, they can't all be like Robert Downey Jr. or Chadwick Boseman. And it just takes a vast amount of people. And the vast majority are the countless other people that it takes to make a movie. Most of us, we never stick around to read any of those credits. But many of us did for those movies because we wanted to see those end scenes. And it got me wondering, as I think about just how long those credits go at the end of the movies, what's the longest rolling credits in movie history, right? And so I looked it up, curious, right? It comes from The Lord of the Rings, right? The Fellowship of the Ring. It's the extended edition, by the way. Now, I'm not going to tell you how long it is. This is the very end of the movie, by the way, and here the credits begin to roll. Now, I'm not going to tell you how long these credits are, but let's see if I can finish this sermon before the end of the credits. All right, we'll see. We're just gonna keep it rolling, okay? Sometimes it might be in the background behind some of the other slides, but we're just gonna keep it going. Now, as it scrolls, here's what you can be thinking about, okay? The Lord of the Rings, many of you know, written by J.R.R. Tolkien, one of the most epic, big, beautiful, amazing stories ever written. As you'll see, a lot of people were invested in this. You guys can dial down the music there in the back, or we might get distracted. But it takes a lot of people. Like, here are the big names, right? They're the big names. They get, like, the whole screen of themselves, but it's not going to last long, all right? A lot of people were invested in making this movie, from starring roles like these ones right here and directors to, like, the catering services and moral support. By the way, did you guys know that they made a movie right around the corner here last year? And they used our church as a staging area? And I'm dying to know, will we be in the credits? I've been told probably not. But how cool would that be? Okay, it actually comes out later this year. The movie is called The Instigators. Yeah, with Matt Damon and Casey Affleck. So they were here, like, staging in the, they ate, like, all these extras and actors were eating in the basement. We got to eat their catered food. It was incredible. So maybe it might say, Granite City Church. I don't know. I doubt it. So all kinds of things get listed out in the credits. And that's part of, like, so think about, like, an epic movie like that. So many people it took to make The Lord of the Rings, and just be invested from supporting roles to big roles. But there's an even more epic story than The Lord of the Rings, all right, called The Story of God, that you and I have also been invited into as well. And today we're going to look at a particular person in this even more epic story by the name of Moses. Now, some people might say that he had a starring role in God's story, perhaps somewhere at the top of the credits, like some of the names that we just saw. And of course, we might call him a hero. Even the Bible itself attests to the greatness of Moses. He's in the Faith Hall of Fame in Hebrews chapter 11. He shows up for a special meeting with Jesus in three of the gospel accounts. He's the primary focal point of Stephen the Martyr's sermon just before he was martyred. So Moses is kind of a big deal, okay? And check out these words from Deuteronomy chapter 34. This is the very, very end of the Torah, the very end of Deuteronomy and the very end of those first five books of the Bible. It says, since Moses died, basically, that's the thing that just happened previous to this, since then no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to his officials and the whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all of Israel. This is, of course, long before Jesus showed up on the scene. Now, a quick overview for those of you who maybe don't know, or those of you who maybe need a reminder of the amazing deeds of Moses. Moses is the one who God used to lead his people, Israel, out of slavery in Egypt. God used him to go to Pharaoh and do just about the boldest thing that anyone could do, tell the king to release his slaves. Think about that. Let my people go. That was the command from God. And Moses, along with some help from his brother Aaron, went to deliver this message, set my people free, let my people go. To which Pharaoh, of course, said, no. All right, then God would send a plague using his servant Moses, and Pharaoh would relent and say, okay, they can go. Then he would change his mind, and then God would send another plague. And this happened over and over again, 10 times this happened. And Moses, through the whole process, he listened to God, he prepared his people, and he let God use him until the people were finally set free. Absolutely incredible story that's been told over and over and over and over again and should be told over and over and over again. Now, of course, that whole plague part was just the beginning. That was just the warm-up. Pharaoh naturally, changed his mind again and chased the people down all the way to the edge of the sea, where scripture tells us that with the sea on one side of them and the Egyptian army on the other side, Moses listened and God made a way for his people where there was no way before. The seas parted and the people went through the sea. Now, is it any wonder that scripture says there has never been anyone else like Moses? Moses was amazing. And if that's not amazing enough, check this out. Numbers 12:3 says that Moses was more humble than anyone on the face of the earth. So not only is he an amazing hero, he's incredibly humble, which is exactly how I like my heroes. So let's check out the origin story. I laugh because tradition tells us that Moses wrote the Torah, okay? So I could just picture him writing about himself. Moses was the most humble man who has ever lived on the face of the earth. Interesting. Okay. But perhaps that was very, very true of him. So let's check out his origin story, okay? If we're talking about heroes, let's look at Moses' origin story. He had a fascinating start to his life. He was Hebrew by birth, but he was boldly protected by his mother when the Pharaoh at that time, the time of his birth, was seeking to kill all the newborn Hebrews. Okay, and so Moses was famously put into a basket in the river and found by Pharaoh's own daughter, the princess of Egypt. So Moses grew up in two worlds. He was weaned and cared for by his own Hebrew mother. He probably would have spent the first maybe 3 years of his life with his own mother, which is incredible. Then he was raised in the palace of Pharaoh as an Egyptian. Wow. It tells us that in Acts chapter 7. Now, I want you to pause for a moment. Does that sound like a story that they could have come up with themselves and written themselves? Like, no way. That is a God story. That's incredible. God is moving. God's orchestrating salvation and restoration for his people in the most unbelievable and the most unimaginable way. This isn't a human story. This is a God story with humans in it, all right? You can't make this stuff up, as they say. But like most of us, Moses steps in and starts to try to take control of what's going on in his own life. And so we're going to pick it up at verse 11 of chapter 2. It says, "One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them at their hard labor." So clearly, he's aware that he's living in the palace as an Egyptian, but he is a Hebrew. And he's going out to see his own people who are in slavery to the ones who are caring for him, educating him, etc. All right? And he's aware of the tension that exists within his own life. Okay? So he goes out and he's watching his own flesh and blood people in slavery. And it says he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew. So worlds colliding here for Moses. It was one of his own people that was being beaten. Now, what I love here is that Moses is clearly himself a lover of justice, okay? But look at what happens when he takes it upon himself to bring justice on his own terms. Verse 12, looking this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. So, Moses commits first-degree murder, all right? He stops, he thinks about it, he makes a plan, and then he kills the Egyptian, then he covers it up, all right? Like, that, friends, is murder, all right? Now, he's not a hero yet, all right? He's already broken Batman's number one rule, okay? So, like, the nerds know what I'm talking about. And I want you to think about the irony here, all right? Later on in the story, we get, like, the big Ten Commandments moment, right, where God gives the law to his people. What's command number 6, right? Thou shalt not murder, right? Which, by the way, is one of my favorites. I'm really grateful for that one. Moses is barely getting started in his life. He's already a murderer, all right? This isn't hero stuff. This is anti-hero stuff at best, Right. One day later, after he killed this Egyptian, verse 13, it says, the next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? So we get another glimpse into his longing for justice. But things aren't working out too well for Moses, are they? And so the man says, who are you, or who made you ruler and judge over us? Okay, like, irony alert again here. Like, it actually is God's intent to make Moses ruler and judge over the Hebrews, all right? But he hasn't done it yet. Okay, so God's going to write the story in a certain direction that actually has Moses becoming a ruler and judge. Okay? But right now, Moses is just in the mess of trying to write his own story. He has a deep longing for justice, and he's trying to just step in and do whatever he thinks is going to work in these moments. Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? This man said. Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. Come on, I mean, Moses is in a mess of a situation. He tried to administer justice on his own terms, and now not only has he become a murderer, and it's known, but also his very own people that he's trying to help, they hate him. And you can kind of get that. Like, maybe they know he's a Hebrew, but he's dressed like an Egyptian. He's growing up in the palace. It's a confusing situation when it comes to Moses. So things go from worse to worst. In verse 15, when Pharaoh himself learns that Moses committed this crime, and Pharaoh tries to kill Moses. And so this is the mess that our hero, quote unquote, finds himself in. He is a fugitive, a murderer, no less. And now he's homeless. He's out in the middle of the desert. And even here, he gets confronted with another moment that requires him to be a judge and maybe administer justice. It says the seven daughters of a local priest, he's out in the middle of the desert, and he runs to a place called Midian, and it says the seven daughters of a local priest, they're drawing water from a well for their father's flock when some bullies come up and they try to chase these women away. But Moses steps up again, driving away these bully shepherds and then watering the flock of sheep for the women. So clearly, Moses, again, has the heart of a judge. He longs for justice, all right? And of course, that's exactly what God leads him to be for his people. But he's met with mixed results at best here at the beginning. He tries to write his own story, and he murders a man. He gets told off by the very people that he's trying to help. Then he steps in and finally has a heroic moment with these shepherd women. Like most of us, Moses is trying to figure out his own story. He's got a longing inside of himself for what's right, as most of us do, right? Sometimes he does the right thing, sometimes he doesn't. That's the story of Moses. It's an okay story so far, but it's pretty small, all right? He gets to be the star of that story, but what if there's a much, much bigger story for Moses to be a part of? That's what we get in Exodus chapter 3. Finally, God introduces himself to Moses and gives to him a glimpse of a much bigger story. A story of rescue, a story of relationship between humanity and the God of the universe. A story that says, you're not alone in this world. A story that says, you are seen by your Creator. And you've got to love the struggle that we see in chapter 3, because it's the struggle that most of us have in our own lives. God comes to Moses and says, hey, Moses, I've got this big story that's happening. I see what's going on in the world. I'm not separate from it, but I want to step in and bring about justice. And here's your part in the story. I want you to jump in. And by the way, it's not a bad role either. It's like a leading role. And what does Moses say? Like when God comes and tells him what he's going to do to rescue the people, Moses says, who, me? Who, me? When God showed Moses all the amazing things that he would do before Pharaoh, Moses steps back and says, please, please send someone else, right? Now, don't mistake this for humility, okay? I know that Numbers 12:3 says that Moses was the most humble person ever, right? But this is not why. There is a reason why, and we'll talk about it later. But this is not why. This is not about humility. This is Moses wanting to be the star of his own small story. He wants what he wants, right? Even when the God of the universe is burning in a bush right in front of him, speaking directly to him and inviting him into the story of human salvation, Moses is obstinate. Please send someone else. To which it says in the very next verse, then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, which is probably something that none of us want, right? Like, Moses, you're invited. I want you to be a part of this story. Your love of justice, I put that in you. I've heard the cries of my people. I want you to step out of your tiny, finite story and enter into my grand, beautiful, glorious, eternal story. And Moses is like, yeah, no thanks. And thankfully, we have a very patient God. And God is patient with Moses, and Moses comes around. Moses steps out of his own tiny story, and he steps into the grand, unfolding story of God. Like, we've already listed out some of the amazing things that Moses did when he stepped into God's story. But of course, Moses didn't do any of those things, did he? He was just obedient. That's it. God did all of those things. So who's the hero of the story? God. God's the hero of the story, right? And what a story it is, right? It's not limited to the rescue of Hebrew slaves in Egypt. That was only the beginning. God invited Moses into a story that was way bigger than himself. And Moses himself testifies to this in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15. By the way, this is many centuries before the birth of Jesus, the Messiah. And look at what Moses said to his people of Israel before they entered into the promised land. He said, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him. This is a messianic prophecy about Jesus that Moses is speaking. The Apostle Peter testified that Moses was talking about Jesus. Stephen, the martyr, the first Christian martyr, testified that Moses was talking about Jesus. But Moses was part of a much bigger story where Jesus was the hero, not Moses. And by the way, Moses loved this. Right? How are we doing on our credits here? They're still going? A lot of names, right? Moses loved this, and Moses grew in his relationship with God as he continued to step into this much bigger story, a bigger story than the tiny Moses story. Now he's stepping into the big God story. His humility did grow. How could it not, right? The closer you get to God, the smaller you know you are. And so Moses became smaller and God became bigger to him. And for all the amazing things that Moses did, heroic things, wise things, powerful things, do you want to know the most amazing thing that you and I can take away from Moses' life? It's this. He wanted more of God. He was already the only human to have ever directly had like this communication with God back and forth. It says that they spoke together like they were in a face-to-face communication, like friends having a conversation. Now, clearly, those face-to-face conversations that it talks about in Exodus chapter 33, Moses was not seeing God's face. It was actually referring to the open nature of their communication, which in and of itself is absolutely mind-blowing. But for Moses, it still wasn't enough, right? Moses wanted more of God, not in a gimme, 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 gimme kind of way, right? But in a genuine, heartfelt longing to be nearer to his loving creator. And so finally, in a moment of utter boldness, Moses said to Yahweh, now show me your glory. which is probably the boldest thing that any human has ever asked of God. Show yourself to me. I want to see you with my own eyes. Let me see you completely. Let me know you in the fullness of who you are. The psalmist wrote songs about this. My heart says of you, seek his face. And so the legacy of Moses isn't just like, he's not just like the star of a movie, The Ten Commandments. There's more to Moses. The legacy of Moses is a small man who wanted to be with a big God. And here's the unbelievable thing for us today. And it's the same invitation that lies at our feet right now. It's the invitation to offer to God our little tiny stories so that we can be a part of the grand story of the King of Kings. But we all have a question that we need to ask of ourselves. Do we want to be the star of our tiny little stories? Or do we want to be maybe just a supporting role in the eternal story of God? Some of you heard me share this story before. When I was in seminary, I was a window washer in the city of Chicago, not up on the skyscrapers. That's what everybody always asked me first. I was usually on the ground with a very, very long pole. I would go all over the city and wash all kinds of windows. And one day I got a call from my manager, and he was asking me to go down for an emergency cleaning of this fancy restaurant downtown. It was an old firehouse that had been converted into a restaurant. So I went down to wash the windows for this building, and while I was washing the windows, I kept noticing that the restaurant was like being combed over by these men in black suits. And it dawned on me that the president, at that time it was President George W. Bush, the president was in town. And that's when I was like, oh my goodness. Like, the president is here, and he's coming to this restaurant. And he wasn't just visiting the restaurant on some like random occasion. That day happened to be his 60th birthday. Okay, so this was no ordinary dinner. This was the president's 60th birthday party dinner, and I was washing the windows for the president on his birthday. And sure enough, like just a few short hours after I had squeegeed every window in that restaurant, the most powerful man in the world looked through them. Probably saw his reflection on the glass because of me. And I got to thinking to myself, like, wow, like, what must it be like to be the president, the leader of the free world? Few of us will never know what that is like, what that kind of power is like to be connected to so many influencers, world changers, and leaders, like sycophants around the world who pretend that they like you just because you're the president of the United States. Like, the presidency is a big story. Our stories are kind of small compared to that. But we at least know what it's like to be president of our own lives, right? Like, we don't often think about it like that, but we know what it's like to be the president of our own lives, which is like the lamest sounding thing ever, right? But you are. You're the president of your own life. I am the president of my life. To which I want to ask, like, what good is that really? It's nice to be the president of your own life. You get to call the shots for your own little story. But it is way, way cooler to be the dirty guy who washed the windows for the actual president, let me tell you. And so when I washed those windows, all of a sudden, my tiny, tiny little story joined with something much bigger and much more important. And in the same way, it's nice to be the leading role in your own story in your life, but it is way, way better to have the supporting role, any supporting role, in the story of God. And there's a lot of them, by the way. Like, this is just a movie. Like, we're talking about, like, the story of the universe. God invites me, and he invites you into his eternal story. How are these credits doing? It's like no joke, right? It just keeps going. That's a lot of names. A lot of very, very, very small roles. But it's a very good story. If you haven't seen that movie, check that one out. Too often we do everything that we can to hang on to the lead role in our own small stories, stories that eventually come to an end, by the way. And Moses' life came to an end too, but the story of God is still being written. And Moses is etched into the story of God. And we can be too. And that's good news because it's a pretty good story. It's a story of love, of salvation, a story of forgiveness. Mike, you guys can come on up. A story of hope, a story of resurrection, restoration. It's a story where you don't get to be the star, but it's okay. The story is so good, why would you want to be the star? You just want to be in the story, right? And so we have the opportunity every week to come and remind ourselves of this bigger story. Right? We take communion and the elements at this table to remind ourselves of what the true hero, Jesus, has accomplished for each and every one of us when he died on that cross. And he knew he was going to die on that cross. He predicted his death multiple times. And he still kept moving forward for the sake of you being invited into this big story. Amazing. And so every week we come together and we remember what was accomplished for us. We remember the bigger story that we get to be a part of. Right? And we remember that on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread and broke it.